Welcome to the Fantasy Golf Insider Podcast. I'm Jeff Bergerson, joined as always by Zachary Turcotte.
How's it going, my friend?
John Deere Week. Zachary, you excited?
It's our favorite time of year. The events between the Travelers and the Open Championship. It's kind of it's an interesting time of season, I'll actually say. You do have to kind of switch your brain a little bit. In terms of going from really good fields, challenging courses to much more like what we see in the fall. Lots of easier courses, more scoring, guys that we've kind of blown off for much of the year now kind of come back into play from this point all the way until Thanksgiving or so. So it is interesting. And without Scotty in the field, it opens up a whole world of possibilities in terms of how to approach the event and how to make lineups. So it is unique. It should be kind of fun.
With the new schedule, we're not sure that we're going to see some of these events for much longer either. So
yeah,
enjoy them while they're around.
Yeah, this could be on the secondary tour, yep. But not quite Corn Ferry tour, right? By 2028. I think next year will be like the last year. Everything is kind of still sort of normal. And then 2028 sounds like that will be the year that everything shifts, yep. and changes. So that's excited to see what they come up with. It doesn't seem all terrible. The guys in Slack, who are usually pretty negative about any kind of changes, were, I think, at least mildly positive. So that's always a good sign. It does seem like they've tried to take into account what the fans are looking for, and even what some of the more hardcore fans would be interested in and are asking for.
Be sure to join us at fantasygolfinsider.com, where we have all of the best research tools you will find anywhere in the industry. We're just bouncing around some other sites, looking at them, and we can confirm that our tools are extremely user-friendly compared to those other sites.
Yeah, I think so, too.
So be sure to check us out. You can become a premium member and have access to all of those tools each and every week. They're loaded up from the course comparison tool to the rolling stats, to the putting splits tool. You can build massive amounts of lineups for GPPs on our DFS lineup builder. So come check us out today. Super reasonable price compared to other sites too. Plus you get our articles each and every week talking about cash game strategy, GPPs, the players that we're actually betting on, the players that we're rostering for our DFS lineups. And grab it all each and every week of the PGA Tour season. So come check us out. All right, Zachary, we will dive into John Deere. I have a couple of topics for you. One is simply just last week's event, the Travelers, which wrapped up this morning really quickly. I had it on in my office. Yeah. I thought I was going to be treated to a little bit of golf this morning, a little more than we actually saw. We saw only 3 shots from Victor. So that was enough to close it out. After Scotty had drained a ton of clutch, difficult putts, he ended up biffing the easy putt this morning. Did you take some of that in?
I didn't get the chance to watch it happen so quick. Like I opened it up just to see if it was still going, and I was like, oh, it's already over. Victor already closed it out. So yeah, closed the app back up, and boy, that was faster than even most Thursday mornings for me taking
it. They both drove it equally well, middle fairway. Scotty just sticks his approach shot to, I don't know, shot tracker was a little bit off, I thought. It looked like about a 5-foot putt or so. I don't know what it actually ended up being. It said like 2-something, but it was farther than that. And then Victor came and put it a couple few feet beyond that, but then came in and just drilled the putt. Fell in the right side of the hole. It looked like it might skim by, but it fell in, and then Scotty just kind of torched it. He hit it so hard. Or it would have went in like Victor's did. He just hit it too hard, and that was it.
Yeah, it's a quick one. It was another week where for a while it looked like, oh my God, is Scotty going to be – I was going to feel like a fool if once again Scotty – you know, we've been saying for weeks and weeks, hey, you can fade him. You can get away with fading him on the GPP side. It would have made me feel foolish if, again, he would have ended up as a big GPP lineup winner. But, yeah, he wasn't, you know, when Victor winning there, that And even before Victor had won, Scotty was still pretty borderline. He would have had to have won there. I wouldn't have been able to check the results quick enough, but I still don't think, other than maybe some smaller field ones, Scotty maybe could have still pulled through. But yeah, and like the $5, the $25, those massive field ones, Scotty was not on the winning lineup. So, you know, again, that fade on the GPP side that we've talked about pretty regularly was not a bad idea. I did write him up for cash. He was a cash game play. I felt like with there not being a cut this past week, that the upside for him was good enough there, and he didn't have to be perfect on the rest of it to get things paid off. So I did think cash wise he was still a good play, but yeah, it just shows you just how much he has to do at right. that high of a price
yep.
in order to be fantasy relevant. So yep. that was a good takeaway. It was kind of an up and down week for me. Built my lineup around Harmon and Cantlay. Those are both guys that are just play well at the course pretty much every single year, and they were okay. They were fine. Cantlay certainly could have been a little better over on the final round there. He'd been in contention at one point and then kind of fell back, didn't really do a lot on Sunday. I got hurt just in the one guy dropped down on, a guy who I just don't ever get right. Ryan Fox, he completely burned me. I thought that I was safe in getting a guy who could at least give me like a top half of the field kind of finish, but that didn't work. He's just been kind of my nemesis all season long. From the Players Championship was kind of the first time that he burned me, but I don't think I've ever been in on him on a week where he's done particularly well, and last week was no different. So he hurt. And then at the top, the last player I actually ended up with, some weeks I build top down, some weeks bottom up, but the last player I ended up going with, I had funds to get up to Ludwig at like 98 or 9,900. That was the last guy that I could afford right there. And I didn't love him last week, but that's sort of where my money ended up going at the very end. I thought, well, how bad could he really do?
Yeah.
Pretty poor.
Yeah.
Pretty poor.
His price it's too enticing at that price. I wish he was just priced a little bit higher and I wouldn't be so anxious to roster him.
And that's what was hard about last week. And that's why another reason why Scotty made the article, because it just wasn't super excited about a lot of the other guys at the top. And sure enough, a lot of them are pretty disappointing. You know, Cam Young had a great final round, but was garbage the first three, you know, so he really didn't do all that much. You know, Xander wasn't anything special this past week. So it's just challenging. They're not a lot of, and then Rory doesn't show. So there just are not a lot of guys that are up there at the top in that upper echelon salary wise that just pay off week in and week out. It seems like it's very difficult to figure out which weeks some of these guys are going to show up, and you know, which weeks they're, you know, they're just mentally going to check out. And maybe that's just a function of signature events now. You know, you start off a little cold, and you know, and that's kind of going to be it. I mean, it feels a lot like the old WGC days where we'd see guys fall to the bottom and then just not really do a lot for the rest of the weekend. But so yeah, it was mixed as far as results.
The winning lineup for that $200,000 and the $25 was Fitzpatrick, who was mm-hmm. 10,000.
Yeah,
Morikawa was 9,200. Victor
yeah.
8,500. And then Aaron Rye actually was 8,000.
Yep.
And then Batia and yeah. Corey Connors.
You see, I had a lot of, like, I had Batia and Connors were both tertiary plays. Aaron Rye was a core play. But yeah, for whatever reason, last week I skipped out on Fitzpatrick. Maybe I just didn't like his course history enough. I don't know. He was one that I didn't end up playing that was key. And then yeah, Morikawa comes, you know, screaming back in the final round. And yeah, it's just, we kind of knew that was going to happen at some point, right? I mean, we looked at his history here at River Highlands. He'd never really done anything. Had a red hot start to the season and then has been just kind of ho-hum over the last couple months or so. So it's no surprise that, what did he end up shooting? He shot like a 60 or something on on Sunday.
Yeah, 61.
Something like that. So he rose up quite a bit to make some noise there. So yeah, he was the real key piece that you needed to figure out.
We read each other's articles each week. What percentage of the time do I roster Victor Hovland?
You've had him a lot more than most over the years.
Right. Yeah, I know.
No. He's been another one this year where it's just, he's just all over the board. Every time.
Yeah.
Every time we've wanted to get on with him, he's been disappointing. I mean, coming in, I think we had even mentioned him. We probably brought him up on the show, just looking at him. You know, he'd missed the cut at the US Open, third the prior week up in Canada, missed the cut at the PGA Championship, and it's been, really hasn't been in contention in a lot of events. And then, yeah, you look at his history again, much like Morikawa, you look at his history there. Nothing stands out, zero top tens in five previous starts. And so, you know, naturally he ends up at the top of the field. And
he's just one of those guys that I see when I watch, I see the talent like spewing out of his ears.
Yeah.
Much like an Oberg, like a Rory, like these guys, I just watch them. I'm like, how do these guys, how aren't they in the top five every single week? Hovland disappoints me so very, very often. And then when he does hit that, you know, what he is capable of, that ceiling, it's just like, wow, this is, why doesn't this happen more often?
I know. Where's it been all season? I mean, yeah, he had the third place finish in Canada. That's a pretty easy course. So it's hard to give him a ton of credit. Prior to that, he really just hadn't been in contention at all.
No.
He did that last year too when he won. I mean, that's what happened.
I didn't have him that week either.
Yeah, Valspar. I mean, coming into Valspar, he was missed cut, win.
I know.
It's just, I don't know what to do with the guy. He's just all over the board. He's one of the more difficult guys to handicap for me. And so then I end up staying away, and then I just kind of end up pissed on weeks like last week where he plays out of his mind and he looks so good. And I'm like, that's the guy that we always thought would be dominating on tour year after year.
He might be just a guy that you just always need to roster regardless in GPPs.
It wasn't a bad price. I mean, that was the thing with him. You know, he was still, 700 cheaper than Morikawa.
Take your lumps, but when you get a performance like this from a guy at 8,500,
right there in the same range as like Goddard and Keegan, who Keegan played pretty well. So it wasn't.
Goddard's another guy I think that has that kind of ability and talent, but is, you know, I just roster him time after time, and then I see this, and then he'll pop up and dominate a tournament, and then he'll flop the rest of the time. It's.
I think we'll be talking about him here shortly too.
Yes, we will. But before we do,
I think I know where this is going.
Do you?
That with that big sigh there, is this anything to do with the article that I sent you on Friday last week?
It's crazy, isn't it?
Oh my gosh, Phil Mickelson.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Phil Mickelson is the topic. For those of you who have not written or read the article by who was it? By Alan Shipnick, right?
Yep.
What are your takes?
Oh my gosh, it's so much worse than I thought.
Like, I know it is. It's horrible.
I figured being a little inappropriate at the club that he got booted from, like, okay, I get it, you know, whatever. That's not great by any stretch, but then reading the article, you're like, oh man, this guy's just as crazy as Tiger is, just without as much substance abuse yet, I guess. Maybe. Who knows? He could be just as messy as Tiger with that kind of stuff and just hasn't gotten in trouble yet. But yeah, the Pat Perez start part at the beginning with him and his wife, that was eye opening. I thought, oh, this is so bad. Like, this is crazy bad. I mean, even Tiger, I don't think, would have the gall to do something like that. You know, like he's at least keeping it to the dirty girls on the internet and stuff.
Right.
I mean, to do that to your fellow competitor right there, was he just that sure of himself that he just didn't figure that Pat Perez's wife, Ashley, was going to mention that to anyone?
Right.
I mean, that's the crazy stuff. And then just everything he did was so public, like reading about how he told members of the course I'm just going to put my phone in your bag. So when my wife is tracking the phone, it'll look like I'm on the course. Like
that'll never get out.
I know that you're Phil Mickelson. People are going to talk about that to other people.
Sure.
It was so, so bad. Like, oh God. Yeah. Yeah. It was a lot. I don't know how you could even come back from that. I mean, it happened with Tiger like 17 years ago with the women. I mean, Tiger, at least for Tiger back at, and this is true of almost all big time athletes. Like if you still have some tread left in the tires and can get out there and play and put it out of people's minds, then there's a chance for redemption. Like for Tiger, he still had big years left. He still had a lot of struggles, but he still had a Masters win out there. He still had a tour championship. He still had the ability to go out there and conquer everything. Phil is beyond that now. So like the last taste in the mouth for all of the fans that are out there is going to be this story. Like that's it. That's what's going to be there forever. And yeah, I don't know what he can do. I mean, he was already kind of a crazy guy with all the gambling stuff, but.
I was even kind of like, who cares? I remember when he spoke out about taxes are unfair and, you know, people went up in arms about that. I'm like, well, okay. I don't have a problem with that. You're betting. I don't care what you do with your money. A lot of Michael Jordan pissed away a ton of money. Charles Barkley pisses away a ton of money.
Whatever
you want with your money, I don't care.
Yeah.
But this kind of stuff is just because it's more than even just that he's just a scumbag doing it. Yeah. It's that he just thinks he's so above
having
to deal with the ramifications. And I feel just so terrible for his like family.
I mean, yeah, the level of narcissism is off the charts.
Yes.
Like, it's really unparalleled. Like I said, there just are not stories of like Tiger going or Tiger was dirty, but he wasn't hitting on other players' women in front of them. Jeez. I mean,
he was whoring it up while his dad was on his deathbed, but
exactly. That's awful too in its own way. But yeah, just for Phil that, and I mean the whole tour has known about this too. I mean, it's just this sort of not so well kept secret that's been floating around forever and ever. And now it finally comes out, and in such a bad way as he's getting removed from all these, like how bad do you have to be to offend somebody enough that you actually get removed from a club? Like that's, yeah. I mean, we're not even getting the full story on that, but I'm sure it's worse than even.
Well, they talked about him having a condo at the club or something.
Yeah.
Up and have people driving around his phone.
Yeah,
I guess maybe it hits me even harder than Tiger because I've just always thought Tiger is an asshole and he doesn't really even try and hide it. He just is a prick. Phil has paraded around like the good guy.
Yes.
With his thumbs wife up, smiling, you know, kissing babies. Gee, he's the great guy. Everyone loves him. He's the Arnie Palmer.
Yeah.
Don't even put your name next to Arnie Palmer for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
You are not him. You are a scumbag.
Yeah. Man. It's crazy. Like, yeah, you hear about some of this stuff around. Yeah. I mean, you hear it, I guess, in other sports and things like that. And maybe it's just the players. We've known these guys around for so long. Like, I mean, this stuff happens in football where players will have 11 different, you know, baby mamas and all that kind of stuff. And
yeah.
So I guess, I don't know, maybe just seeing it up close, but. Yeah, I don't know. It's just it was wild. Once all of the details came out, I thought, man, this can't be fixed now for Phil. There really is no coming back. He's just going to kind of have to disappear into obscurity now.
I think so. Well, he won't be back on the PGA Tour. So
no, they won't have him back. So no. Yeah, I mean, other than the Masters for a few more years, there's probably not a lot of. I mean, I guess I don't know. I think most of his exemptions have probably run out now for winning the PGA Championship, what he did. I think this was the last year for some of those. But, yeah, but
he could have been like the face.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of golf, right? I mean, he could have been in the announcer's booth whenever he wanted to.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, he could have been hitting the opening tee shot at Augusta till he was 85 years old. And yeah, now all of that is gone. I mean, yeah, and I don't know. I can't even see a path for him. But, yeah, that's what they talked about, Ryder Cups and being in the announcer booth. And
yeah, and exactly. Yeah,
he's a personable yeah. guy. He would have been probably pretty good at yes. the announcer booth.
Yes, and everyone loved him.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, it was
shocking. Yeah, if you haven't read the article, be sure to check out the article. We covered most of it, but it was like, oh, wow, that was quite sickening to read. So,
yeah.
But we move on. Yeah. Good transition. Right. The John Deere Classic. We know it's TPC Deer Run. Really, really easy course. We've seen scores mostly – winning scores in the minus 20 range, 7,327 yards, par 71. Fairways are quite wide. Rough is quite low. Greens are quite slow. 5,500 square foot greens, so they're not even that difficult to hit. Only three water hazards on the course. So we're looking just... Although, you know, when you look at tournament history, you do see some bombers who just get out and rip it. But you also see, like, great putters winning here, too, which is wild. Steve Stricker, Zach Johnson, guys like that who just, you know, can putt the hell out of it. And then you also see other guys who just grip and rip. So it's a weird combination. What comp courses do you use this week, Zachary?
Let's see what we got here. I used Summerlin, Twin Cities, Detroit, Vidanta Vallarta, Keene Trace, Tahoe, and Craig Ranch.
What statistical categories do you look most at here or least at?
Oh, boy. What have we seen here over the years? I mean, the key stat breakdown, I got the strokes gained putting is 30, teetering 20, birdie or better 20.
So you're putting more 10, emphasis on putting than you normally do here.
A little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. A little bit more. Proximity 10, scrambling 10, strokes yep. gained off the tee was one. I don't remember. I mean, that's kind of, you know, I feel like this was also a greens and regulation course.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, another name I remember from way back in the day who used to play well here every year was Johnson Wagner. He was sure. one who just wasn't particularly skilled in any one area, but greens and regulation was always yep. one where he tended to be way up there. So that was one that worked out.
That's a stat we don't even look at that closely anymore.
No, pretty rarely. But yeah, that was one that stood out. And then, yeah, him and another, like Lucas Glover is somebody yes. who's played well here. Obviously not a great putter. So,
right.
You know, right. Throw that off a little, but he's been outstanding at this particular event over and over, and he's another guy who's extremely good tee to green, tends to be really good greens and regulations type. So I think that's about just start adjusting a little bit. Like I said, I try to pick a lot of easier types of courses where scoring is much more important than normal. We've seen some just outrageous scores in terms of the wins over the years. Like, what have we seen here? Yeah, like minus 18 last year. So that's not too high. But then minus 28 the year prior to that. Yeah, it's been it's usually right around the low to mid 20s for where the winning score is at. And I don't see a ton of weather this week. Maybe Thursday morning. It looks like at 7 a.m. the winds are 11 gusts 30. But then by 10 a.m., the gust is 23 and then 15 the rest of the day. So not horrible. We'll kind of see how that develops. Friday, mostly reasonable, kind of in the 10 to 15 mile an hour range throughout the day. Don't really see a ton of problems weather-wise, but we'll look tomorrow and then Wednesday as well, just on the hour by hour, just to see if any sort of weather edge does develop there. But right now, I'm not seeing a whole lot.
Very good. Pricing clearly going to be different this week with the field strength being less than we've seen quite a bit with the elevated events. So we got Chris Goddard up leading the charge at 10,700, Ben Griffin 10,500, Keith Mitchell at 10,000. That's our 10,000 and up range. Then Keegan Bridgman, Jackson JT Poston, and Jordan Spieth going down the list. What do you like here?
I think Ben Griffin is going to be my play this week at 10,500. He seems to be the one who stands out the most. He wasn't real hot to start the season, but if you're looking at just his last eight events, six of those are he's finished 17th or better, four of those top 10, including a 10th place finish here this past week, a 17th place finish at the U.S. Open. He looked good at the PGA Championship. So his game is starting to come together. You look statistically at him over the last 16 rounds. He's fourth in tee to green. So his tee to green game is really on, which great. I mean, that's sometimes been an area of weakness for him. Ranked second in terms of strokes gained total there. So putter's been okay around the green, extremely good. So I like that. He finished fifth here 2 years ago. Just in comparison to a lot of these other guys, I think he's probably had the most success here in recent years that you can point to. Goddard, obviously, he's got two wins this season. He's been a very, very good player, but a little bit more up and down since then. You know, since those two wins, hasn't necessarily been in contention all that much. I guess I tend to lean Ben Griffin a little bit more than Goddard. Some of these other guys, like you look at like guy like Keith Mitchell there, it's, man, that's tough at 10,000 for me to get excited about Keith Mitchell. Are you in on Goddard this week?
I'm not excited about Keith Mitchell, but I'm finding it very easy to build lineups, even stacking two of those top three.
Yeah.
You're still left with like 7,300 in salary, which I'm not having a problem down in that 7K range. It's kind of just all muddled together down in that 7K range. So yeah, I like really the idea of all of those guys up top having some exposure. Don't love the 9K range this week necessarily, like I usually
do. No. I mean, Keegan's just been okay. He's 14th this past week. Yeah, the rolling stats look fine. You know, the putter hasn't been great, hasn't been terrible. Irons look pretty good. I mean, he should finish well. It's just hard for me to ever get excited about him at 9,700. He's not in contention enough to get me that excited about the price. Guy like Bridgman there at 9,500. Really, he was a guy who started the year super hot.
Yes.
Win. Yep. Everything was going well, and he hasn't been missing a lot of cuts, but I can't really get that excited to pay 9,500 for him to finish like T33 or, you know, something like that. I'm probably more excited about a guy like Jackson Quaivoon at 9,400. He's just a real up and coming young star. He finished 11th here a year ago, was 23rd a couple weeks ago at the U.S. Open. He has all the talent in the world. He just doesn't have a ton of tour experience yet.
That's not usually your cup of tea to go with the young studs, though.
Not usually, although this week, you know, there's a couple exceptions, I think, this week. We've seen, and I'll mention him here, but Blades Brown at 7,600 has been somebody that I think we've both liked a lot this season.
Yep. Yeah,
I'm really surprised that he's still down here at that price, considering what we've seen out of him in some of the easier events this season. But this is a good spot to pick some of those guys. Like, it's, you know, I'm a little bit leery about doing it at an event like the U.S. Open, you know, where they're going to be extremely challenged. And he fared well there, which is great. But these guys do tend to, if they're going to have a moment, it's going to be at an easier course in a weaker type of a field. I can't say that I love the price, but the problem is that I just don't love a lot of the other guys in that range. Like Bridgman's been kind of cold. JT Poston actually didn't play. Boy, if he did you see the hole that just annihilated him the other day?
No,
he made like a 12 or something ridiculous on a hole. I mean, it was crazy. It was awful. So he finished 69th, but it should have been a little bit better than that.
Outside of that hole, it wasn't that bad.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you take away like the 7 shots that he dropped right there. Yeah. So, but I just don't love that range. Like, I don't love Bridgman there. I'm not super thrilled with Keegan.
Jordan?
Spieth is, I mean, he's a former winner at this event.
That was his first win on tour.
Doesn't have a top 10 this season, which I don't like. He has a number of top 25 finishes. He may be somebody that ends up making it for me just by default. Because I don't love a lot of the other range. There's just not a lot of players that I really love. And so I do think that he probably could put it together right here, even though he hasn't looked great.
The thing is, he has done nothing well recently. You look at his rolling stats over the past 16 rounds. He is 96th in tee to green, 97th strokes gained approach, 84 around the greens. Mr. Magician around the greens is 84th. 120th in putting.
Yeah, everything in his last 3 events has been just awful. It's been poor. I do like Eric Cole there at 9,100. He was kind of up near the top. It was the second week in a row that he's second start in a row where he's been first round leader and then kind of fallen back. But this should still be a really good course for him. The only real area that he's had problems here, as well as much of his career, is off the tee. But that should be kind of neutralized by Deer Run. I don't really think he's going to have a lot of issues with that. The iron's been good. Obviously, the short game is outstanding. And so he does have an okay. He did finish 7th here a couple of years ago. Not real remarkable around that. But like you said last week, very, very streaky player. And I still think he's really only had a couple of bad rounds over the last couple of months. So I still think he's somebody that you could definitely look at there as a potential core play. What about like Thor Bjornsson? He's, again, another guy who's been up and down this season, but has a very, very good history here, 17th, 2nd, and 21st. Does that do anything for you?
Yeah, it does. I just don't like what I've seen.
Right. Yeah,
over the past couple of months from him, it hasn't been very good. No, yeah. I don't think so. So with that being said, I would expect him to do something great. But I'm going to your side and going some Tom Kim this week.
Okay. It seems like he's kind of started to turn things around.
Yes, yes.
He was 15th at Canada, was 3rd at the U.S. Open. And even before that, he was starting to play, you know, just a little bit better. We know how good he is. Like, I feel like he's still young. What is he, 23, 24, something like that? He's not that old. So I think he's probably just going through a little bit of a rough patch there. All of the numbers are starting to turn for him. Tee to green game is very good. Iron play in particular, which I am, I think, much more focused on this week than, you know, what I would be otherwise. So, yeah, I like Tom Kim a lot. I saw you were also in on Doug Gim for an outright.
Yes, yes. And he's one of those guys, kind of like a Lucas Glover type, where he's just an assassin in his approach game from tee to green, just sucks at putting.
Yeah.
But we've seen Lucas Glover have success here before. We've seen some other guys who weren't good putters at all. So I can go with him. One thing I will mention that I use on weeks like this, and I always mention in my article, is you can go on the course comparison tool on the website and just filter easy scoring difficulty. Just click the easy scoring, show the courses, check them all, and then generate results. And you can see who plays best on really easy scoring courses, which brings me to another guy in that 8K range that I will have exposure to in GPPs. That's Sung J.M.
Okay. Yeah. It's,
I don't like him at all, and I hardly never roster him, but you put him on an easy course, he's a birdie making machine.
Yeah. He's number 3 in my comp course model this week. 18 starts, over 1.5 strokes gained per round. Yeah. So that's, I mean, that is compelling. I mean, he's had a little bit of he hasn't been all bad statistically. Off the tee, pretty good. Short game, pretty good. It's just the irons have been
awful.
Miserable yep. for him.
Yeah.
Kind of an interesting history. He's 3 of 4, finished 12th a couple of years ago, but yeah, definitely has the potential there.
Did you see enough out of a couple of times this year come out of, you know,
slumps? Yeah.
Yes, correct. To
yeah. Just hasn't been able to do anything consistent.
No.
Dropping down a little bit there at 8,200. Denny McCarthy probably turned a few heads last week at the Travelers at the 14th place finish. Now he's coming to Deer Run, a place where he's finished 6th, 10th, 7th, and 11th over the last few years. Again, another one of those guys where, yeah, statistically you're going to have to ignore a lot of the numbers of what he's done this season. Yep. But in a weaker field at 8,200 with that kind of history and then what we saw this last weekend – I can definitely find some space for him on my rosters.
Me too. Yep. Yeah, because he's had a really, really crappy year.
Yes.
Just in general, but a place where he's comfortable. Maybe he found something.
And he's made cuts this season. So that's good. Like the finishes have been kind of lousy, but at least he hasn't completely ruined your team for the most part.
Tee to green, he's just not good tee to green. But on a course like this, you can get away with that.
Yeah, I think so too. Do you like Davis Thompson's course history here? Yeah. See, a lot of these guys, it's going to be tricky because, you know, all season they play on these tougher courses, tougher events.
Yep.
And they get blown away, and it looks ugly, and then they come here and immediately turn their season around. And something we're talking about at the top of the show. I think we have to take that into account this week and take advantage of some of these price discounts that we're getting. So you'll see a guy like Thompson, who's shown a little bit of life at a couple different points this season. It hasn't certainly been great, but I think just on history alone and knowing the sort of potential that he has, I think 8,000 is a pretty reasonable spot there to go back in on him. So I like him there. I would
say if you're doing GPPs this week too, to not try and be so heavily concentrated on guys, I would lower your exposure. We've seen some wacky things happen here. Remember the Michael Kim tournament?
Oh, geez. Yeah,
what year was that when he 2018. Ran away with it?
Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah, he was like 27 under.
Oh, he won going away. Wasn't even close.
And then it's wild. So what has he done here in his next 5 starts? So he has not made another cut.
Insane. So I'm just, I think you lower your exposure a little bit, spread yourself a little bit thinner across guys. Generally, I like to be more concentrated, but this is a week where I like to have exposure to a few more guys. Cause like you said, you never know who's going to pop now that we're on a really easy course.
Guy that I really like. There's a couple of guys that I really like. I already mentioned Blaze Brown. He's been fantastic all season. He's been pretty good on the Corn Ferry Tour as well, but we've seen him show up on these easier courses and not just make the cut, but finish somewhere near the top. I like him a lot. I also, it gets back to the theme that I was talking about before, but Rico at 7,600 there. This is right around the time of year when it becomes Rico season again. There's a handful of these guys that will become cash game regulars for you in the fall season on the easier courses. But this is one. The last 2 years, he finished 26th and then 11th. Last year, the tee to green numbers are still pretty solid. It's really just kind of been his short game where he's stumbled. So, yeah, he is somebody that I will start to roster more, and I think we're getting a pretty nice discount on him. Aldrich Potgieter at 7,500. I think it's time to start playing him again. Guy who is not necessarily accurate off the tee, but extremely long. I think he's going to be able to tear up this course. He had a withdrawal last year, so I guess we don't have a lot of info there on him. But tee to green number is actually really strong off the tee. Irons have been pretty good. Putter actually not even all that bad. Finished 8th in his last start up in Canada. Another course that plays a little bit to the easier side. So I think he's another one right in there as well that I like quite a bit. We're liking in this lower 7K range.
Jackson Suber, I have some exposure to down here. John Kiefer, I have exposure to down here. I even have some Taylor Moore and your guy, Emiliano Grillo, at 7,300.
Okay, yeah, two straight top 25s for Emiliano.
Yeah, if he's found something, this is a pretty good course for him. He's a big-time approach guy, and when you look at his recent stats, he's normally brutal in the putting, but his putting hasn't actually been that bad over the short term. So,
you going to roll the dice at all for any shares on either Tony Finau or Max Homa at 75 and 7,400. Max has a couple of top 25s in a row coming in.
I guess I'd probably be more apt to do Homa than, I don't know. I guess, I don't know. Finau, just, I don't know.
You don't want to.
I don't know.
It hurts. Yeah, I don't know. Homa, we may just be seeing there might just be enough there to see a little bit of a turn here late in the season. It worked for him last year. He needs these events. He needs to play well in these events because he hasn't really played well for much of the rest of the year. Augusta has been like the one spot somehow that he's been able to find a way and turn it on. But yeah, I'm at least intrigued. Like those are not bad prices for guys who I think could still have a fair amount of potential upside.
That's why I'm owning those high end guys this week, because this range is full of decent options.
I think Zachary Beaushoux at 7,300, he was a disappointment in Canada and missed the cut. Prior to that, though, he had a bunch of top 25 finishes. This should be a real nice course for him, considering how good he is from tee to green. He should be in good position to score for much of the weekend. I think 7,300 is a pretty good price right there. Sort of drops off for me after that. There's not a lot of names that stand out. You could go with Seamus Power for course history to fill in a few shares. Yeah, there weren't really a lot of other names. Maybe you could take a few shares of a guy like Matt Kuchar at 7,100. I don't love it. Three top 25s in the last four starts. Fifth place finish here a year ago. He's usually a guy who can still kind of pitch and putt reasonably well. So I guess I don't hate that if you want to go there. Can you go to either Lucas Glover or Zach Johnson at 6,900 this week?
Lucas Glover, yes. Zach Johnson, no.
Just don't think the cuts made streak can continue, huh?
When's he played last?
Oh, he's been on the he's on the Champions Tour. Are you disregarding the Champions Tour?
How's he been doing on the Champions Tour?
Oh gosh, he was in contention the other week.
Was he really?
I happened to flip through and see. So he won. He won the Principal Charity Classic on this 2 weeks ago, basically. Yeah. He's won twice. He won in March, and then he won here. He has yet to finish worse than eighth in eight starts this season. So he's just rolling it up over there.
He is primed for it, isn't he?
So he's been playing. So he's been playing regularly, which I like.
Thing is he hasn't been good here though in quite some time.
Yeah, that's the thing. His last good finish here it's been a while. Like, when did he have?
He's been making cuts.
Yeah, but it's been since 2018 was the last relevant finish that he had. Now, the last six starts, he has finished outside of 26 was his best finish 2 years ago. But yeah, the last six haven't been magical. But you know, 6,900. There's not a lot of other names that I really like.
Glover was good here last year.
Yeah, he's been good here in six of his last seven starts. So he's been really poor on the season though. That's my only worry with Glover.
Let me just look at his rolling stats. Yeah, see, his tee to green game hasn't been good. Good though.
And his short game has been miserable.
Well, we know.
Yeah. I know. It's hard when all of those things are bad. Like, you can kind of forgive, okay, if the tee to green game is super good, but then the short game sucks. Like, that's classic Glover. Then we can kind of get around it. But man, everything is pretty rough otherwise. There's not a lot of other names that are are down here that that are really standing out. Maybe you could throw in a little Mark Hubbard at 6,800. Who else is there? Anybody else who's showing much form? Not really. No, there's
no. Let's shift to betting for a couple of minutes here. This is probably a week you want to shoot for the moon more than usual, because I'm not real interested in Griffin or Goddard up at whatever.
Yeah.
At 12-1, 14-1, something like that. I would rather shoot in the, we've mentioned some of these names, Blades Brown, you can have a 55-1.
Yeah. I don't mind that. Yeah. I mean, might as well take a shot at like an Eric Cole. I wouldn't mind that. Or even like a Tom Kim's going to start in that 30 range and then work your way back. I'm sure the odds are already tightening up. Yeah. Blades Brown.
They have tightened up. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't,
but you can have Blades Brown at 55. I like that. Yeah. He was on my betting card. So.
Yeah, I don't mind that. You want to take shots at a guy like Grillo at 60 or 70, wherever you can find him right there. Yeah, that's kind of the range that I'd be looking for, just because we have seen some big long shots here. Yeah, Michael Kim bet was a huge long shot. The Lucas Glover bet, I'm pretty sure, was probably a pretty big long shot when that one happened.
JT Poston, Davis Thompson, yeah,
I'm sure. I'm sure those were all decent numbers. Last year, Brian Campbell, I'm sure that was a crazy high number last year when he won. I think that was his second win of the year, but I think it was a crazy high number.
Dylan Fratelli, Zachary?
Dylan Fratelli, yeah, there we go, 2019. Yeah, so it hasn't really been one where the favorites have shined. So yeah, I would stay off of that. That trap at the top, those first handful of names, and take some bigger shots this week.
Yeah, if those top guys happen to win, then tip your cap. But
yeah, I'm just never going to bet Keith Mitchell at 20-1.
I don't think so.
I'm sorry, that's not ever going to happen. And yeah, you even get a guy like Jackson Quaboon at 22 or 25. Like, no, I don't think so. I don't have any interest in doing that. Maybe he will be that good, but I'm not paying that right now.
Right. Yeah, he's only 25. Yuck.
Yeah.
Bridgman, 28 even. Yay.
Yeah. Guy who was done.
I'd rather drop down. I got Jackson Suber on my card too, so get him at like 766 or 70 or something like that.
That's a solid number.
Yeah. I just think one of those guys is very capable. We've had decent seasons and tougher fields can pop this week. So take some shots to try and recover from weeks like last week when we don't hit enough.
No. So. Yeah, definitely not.
Anything else to add, Zachary?
No, I think that's good. I think we'll get out of here. We've got a couple of weeks of kind of filler events, but I think it's good. Kind of gets you ready for what's coming up in the fall. And and then we'll have the Open Championship in a couple of weeks and then the playoffs. So it's going by fast.
Yeah, next week is the Scottish, isn't it? Yeah, Scottish next week leads into the Open, right?
Yeah, it's coming quick. And then obviously we got the big 3M coming after that. So there's an action-packed schedule ahead.
My daughter was just talking about that today. It's a highlight of her summer when we get to go out there. So awfully fun. But
nice.
All right. Be sure to check us out, fantasygolfinsider.com. Become a premium member. Jump in that Slack chat, too. It sounds like people are voicing some opinions in there. So thank you very much for joining us, and we'll be talking to you next week.
Good luck.